Welcome to the Rise and Shout podcast, episode 133. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. I am joined first by Brandon Gurney of the Deseret News. We talk about football recruiting and also how that affects the depth chart going forward, especially at some of the positions like offensive line and wide receiver. We also talk a little bit about the future of the basketball team and the recruiting that should put BYU in a great position to compete for years into the future. Matt and I then talk about the NFL playoffs. We talk about the basketball losing streak and then winning streak and their chances of making the tourney. And finally, we talk a little bit about football and fair and unfair criticisms of head coach Bronco Mendenhall. Once again, this is the Rise and Shout podcast. Catch us at loyalcougars.com and also on iTunes, and you're going to listen to us right now. All right, welcoming back to the Rise and Shout podcast, our multiple appearee, if that's actually a word, on the podcast, Brandon Gurney of the Deseret News. Brandon, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, great to be back. It's been a while.
Yeah, we took a little time off. My day job got in the way. It's kind of annoying, but
oh, you have a real job.
Yeah. I had to do the day job, but luckily I'm back doing the more important things, Brandon, which is talking BYU sports. So as always, we talk to you recruiting. I don't know that there's a lot of talk about, but we'll talk briefly about this. I think probably the question that people have is Fred Warner. So he's got a verbal, but man, if you read the recruiting blogs and some of the other things, seems like there's some heavy hitting schools that are interested in pointing him in their direction. What kind of chance would you give him, and do you have any insight on whether he's likely to ever suit up for BYU?
I haven't talked to Fred for a while, but there's several things working in BYU's favor with Fred Warner. One, he committed very early in the process, and he committed early in the process because BYU was really the first school to go after him. That plays huge with kids in the recruiting process because it gives them a level of trust and comfort that just later rivals can't really establish in time, and BYU definitely has that. And he's been pursued heavily by USC before. When he first committed, I was kind of like, oh, man, BYU's going to have to work to hold on to this kid. He wasn't a mission kid, which always kind of gives you a red flag. You don't want to paint everyone with a broad brush, but he was a noted USC fan. And so when USC went after him, I was like, oh, boy, hang on, right? So the best thing he did is right after USC offered him, he went to BYU function just by himself and reestablish his commitment. So I think that was a big thing and a good indicator. But here's the problem. USC, it was Lane Kiffin back then. And USC had lost a lot of luster under Lane Kiffin. You just look back at recruiting where USC just takes whoever they want in Southern California. That was changing. And kids were starting to look at UCLA, Stanford, Oregon. And USC really lost a lot as far as recruiting goes because people sensed that program going down, and it did go down. Lane Kiffin was a disaster. But now that USC has Steve Sarkisian, that's a lot of excitement. Steve Sarkisian's a very good recruiter. He generates a lot of excitement, and that might be enough to get him to sway USC's direction. And the fact is, he's tripping to USC. Why would you trip to USC? You like to think, oh, it's a free trip. You want to be wined and dined and all that, but it's not serious. That'd be nice to say, but there's a reason he's going to USC. And in my mind, he's still leaving all options open, which is a scary thing because USC can bring a lot. That's a very good program. And with him having Southern California ties, hang on. It could get interesting is what I'm saying here. I think he will be able to retain him, though, just because of the establishment of trust they've made there, and they have very good coaches recruiting him. I believe Kelly Papenga, if he's not the best recruiter on staff, he's easily one of the top ones. Very good relationship with Coach Papenga, and I think that's going to play in the end, and I think BYU's going to retain him. But as always with 16, 17-year-old kids, you have no idea for certain what these kids are going to do. If there's any lesson I've learned over the process of covering recruiting, it's that. But I think BYU retains him. I will not be shocked if he does sign with USC.
Yeah, sure.
So there you go. There's an extremely long answer to your question. But
well, I think when it comes to one of the top linebackers, high school linebackers in the country potentially coming to BYU, people probably want the long answer. So
yeah.
Another person that's coming in that's committed and signed a letter of intent even is JC transfer Nick Kurtz. So
yeah.
Wide receiver was a little bit of a sore spot this year between some injuries and maybe some guys not playing up to what folks thought they would do. And with Hoffman leaving, it seemed like it would be, before Kurtz signed, be a kind of a wasteland of, I'm not exactly sure, will Oppo be healthy? But then you see 6'6", some speed. What do we expect out of Kurtz next season?
I think you expect him to start and play a significant role in this offense. His film is incredible. You hate to make certain comparisons just because it can prove faulty. But you look at the last receiver BYU had from Grossmont, and that was Todd Watkins. And you think of the impact Todd Watkins made that first year. It was huge.
Yeah, it was.
He did things that you've never seen BYU players able to do. I don't think we'll ever see a player that could stretch the field like Todd Watkins. Not even on Austin Collie. I mean, his speed, his straight ahead speed was just phenomenal. I really think Kurtz has that ability. Not in the ability to stretch the field like Todd Watkins. He doesn't have that speed. But as far as just the big receiver that can just make plays on the ball, I think he can be a Cody Hoffman, which is about as good as it gets with BYU receivers. I really believe he's going to have that kind of impact. I'll be surprised if he's not BYU's top receiver next year and if he doesn't play a big impact. That's a lot to put on a first-year player, but I think this kid's exceptional. If he progresses like you think he would, and he's already in school, he's going to take part in spring ball, I think everything's lined up where he's going to have a huge year. We'll see. I obviously you have to do it on the field, but based on the film, the quality of offers he received and just his timetable, I'd be very surprised if he did not make a significant impact on the BYU offense next season. And I think he'll be the recruit that you're going to see the biggest impact from. And it's not really even close in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, especially with the holes at wide receiver. So let's talk about that. Obviously, Oppo, if he's healthy, but you know he was kind of a question mark of health all season, yeah. And has been to a certain extent his entire time at BYU. Matthews, but I mean it starts to get pretty thin after that. What else from a depth chart perspective for BYU? What else are we looking for at the wide receiver position, or is it really Kurtz, Matthews, Oppo, and bust as far as that position goes?
Well, Apple, it's not just at BYU. All through high school, he never played a full season of football. He just might be one of those guys that just is always hurt. There's just guys like that. We know of his shoulder problems, which is really unfortunate because he's such a talent, and you just have the feeling he's never really been able to realize all that. And then Mitch Matthews, he's had injury problems, a lot of injury problems.
Yeah.
But I think you've seen when he's healthy, he can be an exceptional game-changing type receiver with his unique size and quickness combination. I won't say straight ahead speed because I think he's more. I think the thing that jumps out at you with Mitch Matthews is how good he is laterally. I mean, to be a kid that's almost 6'7", to move that well laterally, it's exceptional. So
yeah,
that's a big concern. I think the most interesting development might be what they ultimately decide to do with Mike Davis. From what I understand, he's probably going to stay on defense. But I'm kind of torn where I think he'd best be served. I think he could be an exceptional player at both positions, but he's definitely a guy that could stretch the field on offense, and with a year in the program, you really expect him to make a big leap forward. But if he stays a cornerback, cornerback's going to be a surprisingly deep position at BYU next season, where you're going to have Trent Trammell and Jordan Johnson returning. We know Jordan Johnson can play, and we know he's very good. And Trent Trammell, coaches were extremely high on him before he went down with injury. And then Mike Davis, if he stays there, he's going to make a big leap. And then you have the starter, Robertson Daniel. Yeah, four quality cornerbacks potentially. Name me the last time BYU had a two deep of guys that you could readily depend on with no question marks in the BYU secondary. I don't think you can. So it's going to be interesting. I actually anticipate that there's a good possibility that they move Robertson Daniel to free safety. They move Craig Bills to cat safety. I don't be surprised if that happens, just because I think they're going to be unusually deep at cornerback. But anyway, that's a huge tangent I'm getting on.
No. I was going to ask you about defensive backs, and you know, Robertson Daniel. You know, his coverage is pretty good, but he is a excellent tackler. I mean, a defensive back, where you know, typically defensive backs on the corner, you sometimes say, "Well, there goes another terrible tackle," but with him it was always line him up, tackle correctly, and it was kind of nice to see that out of defensive back. So I think free safety would actually be a pretty good match for his skill set. Other depth position, the position where depth is talked about the most, is got to be offensive line. Obviously there's a couple offensive linemen in this class that are being recruited. I don't know if we'll see any of them make an impact next year, but to walk us through the depth there. I mean, it seemed like the offensive line started to get better towards the middle of the season, but by the end of the year, there were a lot of problems in pass protection, as well as even in the running game, there were some issues. So, is this going to be the same thing next year, or do you think there's improvement and or other things that are going to happen that we're going to see a better offensive line play in 2014?
Well, I think it has to get better. Everyone's going to be back, which I think is going to be a plus. They have a year. They know what 2J expects and all that. Last year's performance, I hope fans aren't too disappointed with what they saw from the offensive line, because what were you expecting? They had almost no experience coming back. And those guys were under the gun from the get-go. And I just laugh at fans criticizing 2J already. I think it's just a natural inclination for fans. It's always the coach's fault. I think 2J did an exceptional job with what he had to work with, to be honest with you. But they're not able to sign the JC guys they did last year just because of lack of scholarships. With everyone back, that just means no one new's coming in. They have two high school signees, and Shannon Herring and the I'm drawing a blank on the other kid. Chambers.
Austin.
Both those guys are mission first guys, so it's going to be a while until you see them. And then the kid from Allen, Texas, great film. Wow, it's exciting film, but you worry about size there. So I don't anticipate him making an immediate contribution. But I think offensive line's a frustrating position at BYU in that I did some research today. The last time BYU had a lineman drafted was 2005. And to me, that can't happen. I look at offensive line, and that should be a position of strength for BYU every year. Just with the athletic makeup and what BYU can draw on there. I don't think there's really any excuse for that. And I think that's one area that just has to get better. It should not be to the point where it's at right now, where you're depending on junior college kids come in to make immediate impacts. That's not where a BYU offensive line should be. And I think they really need to get to the point where they're rolling out the studs that they used to, like the Ray Fangas and the Travis Brights and those kind of guys. You don't really see BYU signing kids like that. Braden Kearsley, that was a great signee. But in my mind, a Braden Kearsley should not be the exception. A Braden Kearsley should be the rule. They should be bringing in kids like that every year. And BYU just hasn't been able to do that for whatever reason. But hopefully that changes, and we'll see next year. I think next year you're going to see a lot of offensive linemen signed, and we'll see what they're able to get there. But, yeah, that's definitely – if I was to pinpoint one position at BYU that has to get dramatically better, it's the offensive line.
Yeah, it makes everything better. I mean, obviously sometimes the criticism on the quarterbacks and the wide receivers can be helped a lot if the quarterback has time to throw the football and isn't constantly forced out of the pocket and out of his comfort zone.
Yeah, and again, I think it's going to get better. I think they have the right coach. I'm a big 2J guy. I think he's the right coach for the job, and I have confidence it's going to get better. It might not come as fast as most fans want, but I really do believe that's going to be a position of strength at BYU sooner rather than later. So
as someone that covers the team and knows these players as they're coming up, and new offense installed this year, had some great moments, had some pretty terrible moments, but overall was a better offense than we had seen for the last couple of years. If you look at, you know, traditional metrics or advanced metrics, whatever you want to look at, it's an improvement over the last three seasons before that. So the question becomes, you know, a lot of fans got frustrated towards the end of the season with some struggles by the offense. I assume that this go fast, go hard isn't going anywhere. Do you anticipate that Anai will make any major changes to the offense in this offseason, or is this something like he feels like he's got something and it's just a matter of tweak and fine tuning?
That's a very, very, very good question. At one end, we're talking about Robert Anai, and his strength is also his weakness in that he's a very dogged guy to his system. He's very loyal to it. He's not a guy that likes to go out of the system, and that can be a strength, but it can also be a weakness. I think you saw toward the end of the year BYU kind of slow down a bit. We'll see if that continues. The offense is obviously going to be a lot better prepared for that rigorous system, specifically the offensive line. But yeah, that's a great question. I don't really know the answer to that. I do believe that Anai will make the proper adjustments. He's very good at just teaching a system and knowing what the strength of his players are and whatnot. I anticipate some tweaking. Specifically, we'll find out in spring. We'll try to get some answers out of Anai. It can be the most cryptic interviewee ever. But
good luck with that.
Yeah, we'll try there. But anyway, I wish I had a better answer for you there, but I honestly don't know.
Yeah, that's a tough one. He's hard to read, and of course, fans want wholesale changes, but wholesale changes don't always produce results either.
No. Yes, and Anai is not that coach.
So. No, he's not. Actually, the going to a go fast, go hard offense was probably as uncomfortable and as much change as you'll ever see. Last question for you, non-football. We'll switch to basketball real quick. And just to ask you, you know, now we've got a couple of Mika is in the program and doing very, very well. I think hitting expectations, maybe exceeding. You look at this team, you look at the depth chart going forward, and obviously they lack depth. Just your feeling a few years from now, is this still going to be a problem? It's been a problem. Depth has been a problem the last two seasons. Is this just one of those temporary recruiting glitches with missions and people not coming, where you just have a couple years where it's a little light as far as depth go? Or do you see this as 3-4 years from now, we're probably going to be having the same discussion about depth on the basketball team?
No, I don't believe that. You look who's coming in next year specifically. Mika's going to leave. Andrus is coming in. He's going to play. I'm actually going to watch Andrus play in about 15 minutes here. A big center from American Fork. Then you have the kid from UNLV. I'm drawing a blank on his name right now. But both those guys should prove very able to supplement a lot of the lack of depth inside. But losing Mika, that's going to be rough.
he's fun to watch.
Yeah, that's going to be rough. So I think next year you might still have those same problems. 2 years from now, maybe the same thing. But when Mika comes back from his mission, and when those lone people, we hype these guys a lot. They're worth it. I think these kids, I've seen them play a ton, and I'm going to be watching TJ Haas here in a few minutes. These kids are absolutely exceptional. I really believe that TJ Haas could prove a better player than his brother Tyler, and that's not a slight at Tyler at all, because Tyler is an incredible player. TJ's more like Marty in that he's quick, and he can play the point guard. And you look at BYU's having a really good point guard that controls the flow of the game is something BYU's lacked most years. TJ Haws has probably the best floor sense of any high school player I've seen. He has a killer crossover. He's a point guard. Everyone looks at him 6'3", 6'4". Oh, he's a combo guy. No, he's a point guard. He will play point guard at BYU. There's no doubt in my mind. And he has the quicks to play point guard. And then you have Frank Jackson. I don't know if many fans know much about Frank Jackson yet. He's a sophomore for Lone Peak. This kid's going to be the equal. If he continues to develop, I hate to use absolutes with high school kids. I do that too much and I get criticized. But this Frank Jackson kid has the talent to be as good, if not better, than a TJ Haws or Nick Emery. He's that good. He's exceptionally quick, great body control. And it's just hard not to be bullish on the future of BYU basketball. And we haven't even gotten to the Arizona guys, Jake Toulson and so anyway, it's hard not to be bullish on the future of BYU basketball with these kids coming in.
Yeah,
it should be some great years ahead for BYU basketball. So
yeah, I understand fans being frustrated with this season. That losing streak was highly unfortunate. But on the other hand, it was not. There's a lot of good players coming, so I'm bullish like you on the future. I think these depth problems are a temporary thing. I think we'll have depth again. And not too far in the future. So, well, Brandon, I know you got to go cover a high school game. So we'll of course let you go and do that. Thanks as always for coming on the podcast, and we'll of course read your coverage of the Cougars and recruiting at on the Des News, and we'll of course look forward to having you on again sometime soon.
All right, great. Thanks, guys.
Matt, it's the podcast.
Yes, it is. Let's get dangerous.
Darkwing Duck reference. I like it.
Yeah, I could sing the song, but I'll spare you.
No, let's do it. Let's hear it.
I'm not sure I even remember how it all goes.
Give it a shot.
I don't know how it goes.
Oh my gosh, you're such a chicken.
Well, and I'm not you, where there's a YouTube video of me out singing Whitney Houston's I Will Always Love You.
Google Adam Mangum Whitney Houston on YouTube.
Who knows what you may find?
Who knows what you may find? That's true, but I sing stuff on this podcast all the time too. I've sung The Police. Did I do Aha? I don't think I actually did.
You did.
That
you
one.
Did Take On Me at one point.
Take
I think.
On me.
And if you haven't, now you have.
And the best music video of all time, hands down.
Yeah.
Thriller's number two.
It's pretty good.
So anyway, and you'll notice none of my top 10 have any videos past 1992.
Yikes.
Because I don't think I've seen a music video.
Do they even really still make music videos? I know like country music TV shows them still, but does anybody show music videos anymore?
You just broke out in the first minute and a half of this podcast, Darkwing Duck reference, and let go the fact that you watch country music television.
That's not exactly what I said.
Yes, it is exactly what you said.
All I said was that I was aware of the fact that they periodically showed
listeners,
music videos.
That's the listeners, after the fact, all saying, yes, you did, Matt.
Well, great. You know what? I don't have any shame. I like myself some country music.
Yeah, there's no shame. There's no shame.
So, I like me some country music.
Oh, wow. I'd feel better if you never did that again.
I'm going to do it again on this episode of the podcast.
Yeah, I have no doubt of that. Thanks, Mater. All right. Let's start off, Matt. We didn't talk about this last time. We kind of forgot. That was 2 weeks ago when we recorded last. The NFL playoffs are upon us, Matt.
Oh, they are indeed in full force, my friend.
And you and I are, of course, happy because our Patriots are once again in the AFC championship game.
Mm-hmm.
Against the villainous Denver Broncos.
And our arch nemesis, Peyton Manning.
Yes. And what we really mean is we are his arch nemesis. Isn't that what we really mean?
Yeah,
I
guess.
What that means. Anyway, Matt, so Final Four, who you got going to the Super Bowl and who you got winning it?
Patriots and the Seahawks.
Patriots and the Seahawks, nice.
And I have the Patriots winning it. I'm a total homer.
You are a total homer. I have Denver and the Seahawks.
What? What have you done? Who are you?
I
I don't even know who you are anymore.
Beat them having to come back from 24 points behind. 24, right?
Yeah.
And we had a guy named Gronk. We won't have him this time.
Gronk no play this weekend.
And John Fox and his coaching staff are going to be ready. They're going to be ready for the run attack. I hope I'm wrong. And it should be a close game. I neither of these games will be blowouts, though there is a possibility, seeing I think last two times at home, the Seahawks have beat the 49ers, I think by a combined score of 1,000 to 10.
Yeah.
I believe that's directionally correct. So anyway, but I think the Seahawks win. And quite frankly, I'm getting tired of Colin Kaepernick. I'm getting tired of him. He bothers me.
Do you think I think he's overrated, honestly.
Oh, he's totally overrated. He's totally overrated. He's a streaky quarterback who's got some problems with accuracy throwing the football.
Mm-hmm.
Who's
not overrated, though, is Russell Wilson.
Oh, I like Russell Wilson.
That guy is good.
But I'll tell you what, you know, as you watch these coaching changes being made and you see some retreads like Wisenhunt and Caldwell getting pulled back, which, by the way, Caldwell, I'm still not quite sure, seeing that he never seemed to know what was going on with the Colts. But you see these retreads, and your first reaction is, why are they hiring a retread? And then you look at three of the four coaches are retreads, right? Fox is a retread, Belichick was a retread, and, you know, Carroll, we've talked about this on the podcast, when he was with the Patriots, when USC signed him, I thought, well, they just signed...
He was a disaster in New England.
You know, and I just thought he's going to be a disaster. And then when he came, even when he came back to the pros, I'm like, well, he can coach college, but maybe not the pros. Wrong again, Adam.
Yeah, he just needed a little bit of time to marinate or whatever.
What?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I wouldn't use that one again. anyway, I hope I'm wrong, Matt. And part of me hopes I'm wrong because I'm going to be on an airplane to Brazil during the Super Bowl.
Are you kidding me?
I am not. A business trip.
Oh my gosh.
I couldn't get around the timing of the departure.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's terrible. So,
if what are you going to do?
I don't know. I might feign an illness. Of course, me saying this on a podcast that's listened to by dozens may make that problematic.
Yeah, that'll definitely get back to your boss.
Yeah, probably. So anyway, I don't know what I'm
sure there's real danger of that.
Yeah, real danger. It'll be all over the Twitter sphere.
It's going to be all over the press.
All over the press. The press that covers BYU podcasts. It's a pretty nasty press. They can get on you, man.
There's like two people on Twitter that listen to this podcast. So, yeah, I mean, you're basically in trouble already.
Whoa. It's like four, man. Let's not sell ourselves short. We're the top-rated BYU podcast that is recorded in Minnesota. I'll have you know. numero uno, amigo.
By a long shot.
By a long shot. By, like, infinity. All right. So let's embrace our BYU-ness and talk about hoops.
Yeah.
So, Matt, when we last talked, we were bullish on hoops. And then, or a couple podcasts ago, and then they lost four in a row.
Yeah.
Including a really embarrassing loss to Utah. And then even more embarrassing losses to Loyola Marymount and Pepperdine on the road. But they have since rebounded, beat two of Loyola Marymount and Pepperdine at home, convincingly, especially against Loyola Marymount and San Diego. They have upcoming road games against San Francisco and Santa Clara, Portland, and then the big matchup against Gonzaga on January 25th. So, Matt, three games, do you feel like they're on the right track, or is the four-game losing streak still bigger in our minds than the three-game win streak?
I think the four-game losing streak is still bigger in my mind than the three-game win streak, just because I'd like to see some sustained winning. I think if we can get more, maybe put together more than four wins in a row, I think
and
helps.
On the road?
get something on the road.
Yeah.
I think it was good to avenge the loss to Loyal Marymount. That does make me feel better. The results of that game show, I think, that this team has made some progress and is figuring some things out. But I think, we'll see how things go. We get into playing, Santa Clara or Gonzaga, especially. I think that's where we're going to know a little bit more about this team.
Well, the good news and the bad news is, Matt, is that it seems like the West Coast Conference may be a little deeper this year than it has been.
I think I might say there's more parity.
Yeah, there's more parity, as even Gonzaga had a loss to Portland on the road. So there's a little bit there. But Matt, let's focus on one particular player for a minute. His name is Tyler Hawes.
Yes.
And he is better at basketball than any of you listening to this podcast.
Unless, of course, he is listening to the podcast.
Or Jimmer.
Or Jimmer.
But I don't think Jimmer listens to our podcast.
Or Michael Jordan. But I don't think Michael Jordan listens to the podcast either.
Actually, he does. That's a little known fact. So maybe he's the second.
It's a very little known fact. In fact, he doesn't even know that.
Yeah, he doesn't even know that. But these last two games, Matt, 66 points in his last two games. The shooting percentage, a little less than 50, but still pretty good. 4 for 7 on threes, and then an amazing 22 of 23 shooting free throws. He had kind of a cold streak during that losing streak besides the Oregon game. He had some off shooting nights, but he is back on target. And, what is this offense to you? How does his play tie to that losing streak and also to our ability to, we'll get to tournament chances here in a minute, but to make something out of this season?
I think that this team's ability to make something out of this season is absolutely tied to the play of Tyler Hawes. You can talk about, Matt Carlino gets a lot of discussion, and maybe we're going to go there in a minute, but I think he has got to be the rock, the consistent performer if this team's going to get to get places like the tournament and stuff like that. I mean, he has to be the one that's going to provide that consistency. Just because I know it's not coming from Carlino and some of the other places that it could come from, some other positions. I just don't know. There's people that play consistently, I think, at some of those positions, but maybe not at the same level as Tyler Hawes, and I don't know that they can make the same kind of impact.
Well, you saw in the let me see, which game was it? I think it was Pepperdine, where we were kind of struggling, and he had been struggling, and all of a sudden he turns it on, and he almost becomes unstoppable. Shooting over double teams. And you just sometimes forget how good he is when he's, having an off night or an off half. And then all of a sudden he's making every shot.
Right.
And like you said, I agree with you. We will rise as far as Tyler Hawes takes us. This team is not deep enough where you can say, even those Jimmer teams, there were games where Jimmer had off nights. And you could say, well, we're so deep. We've got Jackson Emeril, Hartsock, Brandon Davies, somebody will step up and fill that void. And I don't know that this team has, let me rephrase that. This team does not have that type of talent.
They don't.
So, he's got to, if he has off nights where he's 4 for 15, like he was against Loyola Marymount, we're going to be hard pressed to beat quality opponents.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of pressure for one guy, and it's unfair because everybody should be able to have off nights. But for example, in a couple of weeks when we play Gonzaga, don't you think he's got to have like 30 some odd points and really, really make a massive impact for the BYU to even have a chance to win?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So,
but you know what? That's the nature of the game. I mean, it's the nature of the team. And right now that's the state of the program. So I don't know if I'd use it. It's not fair. Everybody should be able to have off nights. I mean, I understand what you're saying there, but at the end of the day, I mean, that's who he is. Who he is to this team.
He is the man. He is the man. So you brought up Carlino before, Matt. I have somehow morphed into a Carlino defender.
Yeah, I've noticed this.
So let me lay it out for you. Here's how I see it. You know that I have, on this podcast, talked about his limitations.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's a true point guard in the way I like point guards to run. He's very streaky. I think he can take a lot of dumb shots. And his defense, while he's great at stealing, sometimes he gets beat one-on-one by guys that aren't that great and that quick. So all of that being said, I don't see a better option. And when he's under control, and he seems the last few games to be playing under control, he is, I think, our best option at the end of the game. Whether he starts or not, I don't really care. You know, it's really who finishes the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think when the big moments come in this season, our best lineup, assuming Mika is healthy, is Carlino, Collinsworth, Mika, Hawes, and either Sharp or Austin, depending on who we're playing. But I think those four guys have to be on the court at the same time. And it's nothing against Holford, who can be a nice complimentary player, but I think Carlino gives us the best chance to win. Agree or disagree?
I think I disagree there. I see what you're driving at, and I understand kind of, you know, this morph, or whatever you want to call it, this process where you've become kind of a Carlino defender.
The hate has gone too far, Matt. That's, I guess, what I'm saying is that he went from being maybe a little overrated to now all of a sudden he's been benched and everybody wants to make all the problems about Carlino. But this team's problems are much deeper than Matt Carlino.
Oh, absolutely. I think Matt Carlino and what we've seen him go through is a symptom.
Sure.
Of the larger problems. But I also think that sitting him down helped.
No, I actually agree.
You know, it helped him. It helped the team. I think it was a good decision.
I agree.
I think if you just kind of land in the place where you realize that Matt Carlino was a little bit overrated, and in some people's minds still is a little overrated, and you understand that, you can be happy with, you know, who he is. I think he's a good, he's obviously a talented basketball player. I think he plays an important role on this team, and I think as he develops, you know, I think he's gonna have a better season going forward than he's had thus far. And I think we can expect some good things out of him, but he's not carrying this team anywhere.
No. You and I never thought that was the case, right?
Right.
There might be others that thought that was the case, that they would rise and fall. And we even said, though, at the beginning of the year, his streakiness would sometimes lead to that. But if you look at the last two victories, he played very well against mm-hmm. Loyola Marymount and Pepperdine. And even against San Diego, you can say he gave some good minutes as well. And again, not flashy stat lines, but I think he's important going forward. I don't think he's going to, like his low of 19 minutes against Pepperdine, I don't think he's going to play that few minutes again the rest of the season, barring some type of injury or blowout.
Right.
I think he'll be more involved. And of course, Collinsworth is awesome. I mean, the guy's like a triple-double waiting to happen. Though, of course, he didn't quite get it the other night, unfortunately. So Matt, let's talk about chances of making the tournament, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that four-game losing streak really, really damaged the at-large potential of this team.
Right.
Before Loyola Marymount and Pepperdine losses, I thought the Utah and Oregon losses were excusable. Like, you could still build a really good resume. Now I kind of feel like you got to beat Gonzaga maybe twice and St. Mary's twice in order to guarantee yourself a shot at the dance without winning the end of the year tournament. And even then, I'm not 100% sure that'll get us in. Am I being too pessimistic?
No, I think you're being too optimistic.
Okay.
I think you're going to have to beat one or both of those teams once. And that one time is going to have to take place at a very specific moment, and it's going to have to be at the conference tournament.
Mm.
That's the only way this team gets in my opinion.
Yeah, it's already a lot of losses and not against. I mean, when you were losing Iowa State, Wichita, UMass, and even Oregon, though they've hit a really rough spot lately, you were at a point where you could say all of those are quote-unquote quality losses, right?
Right.
Losses to Loyola, Marymount, and Pepperdine on the road,
no.
Those aren't quality losses.
And so when you sprinkle that in with the other losses, I think it's very difficult for this team to make a case at this point for an at-large bid.
Yeah, I will disagree with you. I think the Texas wins and those losses and the Stanford win still is a resume that could, if we really made a long run here, could get us an at-large. I mean,
you know what I mean? That you basically win out is
yes.
The scenario you're talking about.
Yes, you basically win out. The computers like us. We're ranked in the top 50 or 40, depending on what computers you look at. But I do think I think that is out there. But do I think it's likely? No.
I just don't think I don't think they're going to do it.
No, I don't think they are either. We're not consistent enough. The defense isn't good enough. I think to put together a run like that, you have to have very good defense. And right now, we don't.
No.
The Cougars don't. And we lack that. We talked about this last time on the podcast. We lack that Jackson Emery perimeter stopper. We don't have anybody that can do that and forces us into zone, which, of course, causes its own problems. You know,
rotation stuff is slow. I mean, it's just not quite there yet defensively.
Yes, yes. And then, you know, Austin's not great in the zone, but Sharp is better. But, of course, you know, Sharp's not that big. I mean, it poses some problems. But luckily, Matt, listen to the podcast and hear Brandon Gurney. He thinks this lack of depth that we've had the last 2 years is a temporary thing. And with all the awesome recruits we have still coming and coming back from missions, that we won't have this problem much, much longer. So that's good. And I trust in Brandon. And all those recruits, actually, more than that. So, Matt, we're going to book in this. I started with Brandon with football. We're going to end with talking football, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So football offseason. Let's start with everyone's favorite thing to do in the offseason, which is criticize coaches.
Yes!
And during the season, quite frankly.
Yeah, it's good. That's fun to do for different reasons at those two different times.
Yes, and by the way, going back to basketball, I think we said this last time, but in case we didn't, if you think Dave Rose should be fired, you're a moron.
Yeah, that's crazy talk.
That's just insane because of a four-game losing streak. That's just nuts. Okay, so let's... I think we said that last time, but in case that wasn't clear, that's insane. So let's move on from that. Going to football, Matt, as we look at Bronco specifically, there's obviously this Fire Bronco group out there that, quite frankly, it's almost like a religion. You can't say anything to dissuade them. You know what I mean? And then you've got these really, really ardent defenders of Bronco who are the same way. They won't accept any criticism of Bronco, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these seem to be the most vocal people on Twitter and Cougar Board. I don't think they're actually the majority of people that are BYU fans. I think most of us fall somewhere in between.
Yeah.
And I think we talked about this last time. We're more towards the Bronco camp than the Fire Bronco camp, though we maybe slid a little bit this season. So, Matt, what criticisms of Bronco are fair and which ones do you think are unfair? So let's start with a criticism of Bronco that you think is a fair criticism that you've seen on Twitter or Cougar Board or heard, during a break in Priesthood meeting.
Or right smack in the middle of a...
Whispered in the back of a boring elders quorum lesson or something.
I feel like there's a lot of discussion around some in-game decisions and in-game strategy, clock management, and those types of things, where I feel like there's consistently been problems with that since he became the head coach, and they still have problems now, you know, about, you know, decisions on when to punt and when to go for it on fourth down, use of timeouts. That I feel like is not. I haven't seen the type of progress that I would want to see in that area. For a guy who's been a head coach as long as he has,
okay.
I feel like they get into situations that are almost textbook types of situations in the sense that they should have prepared answers for, they should
yes.
have prepared strategies for, and they clearly don't.
Yes, okay.
And that I think that's a fair criticism of a head coach.
I think that's fair. So my fair criticism, at least one that I think is fair, is even though he's the defensive coordinator, I think the buck stops at him as far as recruiting is concerned. It just kind of has to.
Mm-hmm.
And the offensive recruiting at wide receiver, Matt, are you there?
Yeah, I'm listening.
Okay. At wide receiver and offensive line, the cupboard has been left too bare.
Yes.
And people criticize him for that. And I understand the defender saying, well, he's not an offensive guy. In the end, he's the head coach. And the fact that we don't have enough talented offensive linemen and enough talented wide receivers in the program at this point, I think it's a fair criticism of him as a head coach. So, Matt, pick an unfair criticism. What's a criticism that you've heard where you just kind of roll your eyes and be like, come on?
See, that's a tough one because, you know, if you would have asked me this question a few months ago, I have a couple of these that I'd rattle off that didn't used to bother me, but do now.
Oh, my gosh. You're not going to bring up firesides, are you?
Well, I wasn't, but now that you've introduced it into the conversation, there is a part of me that feels like that, you know, that is an unfair criticism. But at the same time, there's a part of me that that feels like, you know, I would lump that in with this conversation about football first. And, you know, I think, you know, this thing about it's not first, right? Football's fifth. And I think that I don't know if that is just kind of spiraled out of control in fandom or if it really is talked about the way that we see it. And if it is, that bothers me.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not trying, you got to be careful here, right? I'm not trying to say that football should be more important for these guys than their families, right?
I think that's exactly what you're saying. And I just, we've just cut that and we're going to put that little quote of yours on Cougar Board.
Just the part where I said football should be more important than their families.
That is correct.
But you know what?
Creative editing.
But it should be pretty important. And it should be, for the coaching staff, it should be very important.
Yes, it should.
And, you know, I don't know what kind of hours these guys put in, but I know there's a lot of discussion around that, too.
Yeah, that's one that I don't know is fair, only because the hours one, because I talk to, you know, I bring on the podcast Jay Drew and Greg Rebell and Brandon Gurney and, you know, a bunch of these guys that cover the team. And all of them have said to me, either on this podcast or off the air, every single one of them, that they think that one's bogus. That they think they were around, a lot of them were around when Lavelle was around and Croton was around, and they see no difference in the work ethic of the staffs. The one time it came up was Jay talking about when Doman was a bishop and the offensive coordinator and said that he seemed to have too much going on, right? That's the only time I've heard any of those guys say anything like that. So, but the one I find to be that one, though, I can't really say it's unfair because I don't actually know how many hours they work, right?
But what's interesting is there is clearly a perception among people fans that there's an issue there, right? And yes. I don't know if it's part of the messaging behind this, like prioritization of things in life or how that message gets out. And if it's just a communications issue, then that really is lame and kind of unfair.
Yes.
But really the proof's in the pudding, right? I mean, you want to, when the team is not performing, people are going to go after all of these types of things.
Yes, sure. The other one that I think is unfair is Broncos' performance in big games. On loyalcougars.com, not too long ago, there was a story about this. KSL, other news outlets have talked about this. If you look at his record against teams that he should beat, teams that are close to him in his ranking, and teams that are a lot better, he does about as good as anyone. I mean, I'm not saying he's better. I'm just saying I think that's an unfair criticism. He's beat some teams he shouldn't have, but most of the times, most coaches lose to the teams that are better than them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he has rarely lost to teams, Virginia being a big black mark on that this year, rarely has lost to teams he shouldn't.
But in that, and that's a crazy one too.
Yeah, and by the way, before you start going on Lavelle lost to a lot of teams we shouldn't have lost to. Okay, you can look back at some of the best seasons we had, and there were these crazy losses.
Was that UTEP was one? There's a classic one.
New Mexico, terrible bowl game record against, you know, and again, I love Lavelle. It's not a criticism. It's just history, right? And, you know, obviously Bronco hasn't won a national championship and quite frankly isn't likely to win one. So, you know, in some ways he's unfortunately going to be compared against Lavelle in a somewhat unfair comparison. But anyway, so that's fair and unfair.
So, well, is it fair for fans to critique Bronco for not being able to compete for a national championship?
I don't think it's fair. I mean, he doesn't. He can control what happens on the field, right?
Right, but he comes out and says that's his goal. That's the goal of the program. We want to win a national championship.
Well, but who doesn't say that? Is there anybody out there? Is there any coach in America that's saying our goal is just to be mediocre? We're just hoping to be okay.
Well, you know, there are a lot of coaches who don't say the words national championship.
Yeah, that's true. But
if he opens that can of worms, I mean, isn't that fair then for fans to say you've stated your goal is to win a national championship and you're not anywhere near that? I mean, isn't that a fair criticism?
I guess, but I mean, don't you think that if he already gets hammered for his priorities, quote unquote, right?
Right.
Imagine if he came out and said, we're really not. We're not gunning for their national championship. Don't you think that fans would be a lot more peeved about that than him?
I don't think he would say it that way. I don't think that the head coach at Eastern Michigan comes out and says that.
Oh, you know, he might.
You know, I don't even know who the coach is at Eastern Michigan. I just know they're not going to win a national championship anytime soon. So he may come out and talk about competing for a conference. Or competing for a division in a conference, right? A lot of these programs may talk about that, and just avoid the national championship discussion altogether. Granted, we don't have that because we don't have
enough. Fair enough.
But I think there's other things he could say to talk about where he wants to take this program without using the words national championship. He chooses to do that. I think he opens himself up to that criticism.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I will concede. I will concede on that point. So Matt, last thing today. We're going to start next week. We're maybe going to do it, but we have filled up the podcast with awesomeness. So
as we always do,
you can't fill it with too much awesomeness.
Your awesomeness will overfloweth.
Yes. Next week, we're going to talk kind of our depth chart overview of some of the offensive positions. We're going to talk quarterback, tight end, and wide receiver next week, which won't take long on wide receiver and tight end. So let's talk about offense, Matt. Had Brandon Gurney on. He talked about that he does not believe an eye will make any major changes in the offseason. That's not an eye's DNA. He's going to stick to his system. That's his belief. He doesn't have any inside knowledge and, you know, no interviews with an eye to confirm that. I believe he's probably right, but let's forget that for a second. And if you could pick an offense, pro or college, that you wish that BYU would implement, play for play, style for style, what offense would that be?
Let me think. In a general sense, one that scores points.
You mean more points than this year's Cougars did?
Yeah. Yeah,
and
about
more consistently
that.
Against good teams.
Yeah,
that makes sense to me.
Honestly, I like the offense that they talk about running. You know, I like an offense like Oregon, like a Chip Kelly Oregon offense. You know, that type of deal. I think it's a lot of fun to watch. I think you win a lot of football games that way. I think you make yourself competitive against a variety of teams. You can compete in a shootout. You know, you can control the clock. You can do a lot of different things with offense like that. So I like that. I don't know realistically, given some of the constraints on the program with recruiting and other things. I don't know that we ever can expect to assemble a team that can run that effectively, though.
Yeah, that's fair. For me, it's I like fast-paced offenses. But what I would like to see is something like the Patriots do, and you also saw it in college a little bit with Auburn, some with Florida State, actually. You would see it, Chip Kelly, with Oregon as well, is changing the pace of play, right? Mm-hmm. One of the things I love watching with the Patriots is they will go no huddle, like three plays in a row, and then they'll huddle. Or if you watch the Broncos, you know, sometimes Peyton Manning does it fast, and sometimes he says Omaha 8 times and hikes the ball at the last second. I don't know if it's a style of offense more than a principle that I would like us to vary. I think going fast all the time, I didn't get a feeling that we wore out defenses with that.
We didn't.
I got the feeling that they got so used to the pace of play that it was became no longer an advantage.
And it felt like we're just going to go fast for fast sake.
Yes, and so many schools do that now that a lot of the teams we were playing, they go against that in practice every week. Mm-hmm. But I think switching up the pace of play, I also think, quite frankly, we need to give Taysom Hill some freedom to change the play at the line of scrimmage. And I know college coaches do not like to do that, but I do think, you know, as he gets out there and hopefully has gotten better at reading defenses, that we can make some changes. And
do you know what he could? Do you know what he could yell out to the team to let them know he was changing the play?
Omaha, somewhere in Middle America. Let's get right to the heart
final
of the matter.
Count, I think the final count on that game, by the way, was 60 something Omahas.
Yes, and you can watch it, all of them, on YouTube.
That's pretty awesome.
Every last Omaha. It's the modern age.
If this doesn't turn into a travel commercial, somebody's not doing their job.
Well, Omaha has already offered that. The city.
Yeah, I saw that on Twitter.
And then I saw a few other people say he's going to, just to annoy them, start screaming out, North Platte! North Platte! Lincoln! Lincoln!
Bismarck! That's not even in our state!
Dang it! He left Nebraska!
We've lost him!
But anyway... Yeah, I just want to see some change of pace, man. That's what I want to see.
Well, and at the end of the day, I just want them to do whatever they do. Let's get some consistency. Let's do something consistently
and score more points.
Well, I think
more yards per play.
Yeah.
Yes.
You don't have to run 100 plays, and I feel like, and maybe it was just, you know, in what we read and conversations among fans. But I feel like there was a real sense of pride behind, we're going to run more plays than anybody else. We're going to snap the ball faster than anybody else. And that became the focus instead of, hey, it doesn't do you any good to snap the ball 3 seconds faster than anybody else if you're three and out all the time.
And it puts your defense in a bad spot. Our defense played a lot of plays. And I'm not saying it was blame for the injuries that we had on defense, but more plays equals more injuries. That's just how it is. And the defense, you know, I think the defense paid the price in some games for that, for the pace, especially on those quick three and outs. Now, sometimes that's going to happen, especially if you try to do it faster. And the good teams, that happens too, right? Mm-hmm. The Oregons, the, you know, whomever you want to pick who does that fast pace. But sometimes I think you got to slow it down. And the other part is, they got to figure out how to best use the offensive weapons we have.
Yeah. And they got to go get some offensive weapons.
Well, the Nick Kurtz, that JC wide receiver who's already in school, Brandon talked about him. Mm-hmm. He's 6'6", supposedly has 4-5 speed. He could be a massive boost. With losing Hoffman, we need a massive boost.
Yeah.
We need a playmaker, man,
maybe he's it.
Maybe he's it, outside of Taysom Hill and Jamal Williams. Well, I should say Matthews. He'll come back. And he was really developing before he got hurt. So
yeah, but he's not like a Hoffman. I mean,
No. But, I mean, it's not a bad second banana to have. Nick Kurtz, is it Kurtz, can be that first option.
Wait a minute. You're just going to gloss over this? You just said he's not a bad second banana?
Yeah.
I
like bananas. You don't like bananas? Are you anti-banana?
This is very strange.
You ate fruit?
This is very weird. I've never heard that phrase before.
You're weird. All right. Well, since now I've had my awesome comeback, would like to remind everybody, you can check out great off-season football coverage and basketball coverage at loyalcougars.com. And you can, of course, if you are somehow listening to this not on iTunes, Download us on iTunes via some podcast app on your, or it's also podcast apps are available for Android devices. If you have those. But I
if you are so inclined.
If you are so inclined. But anyway, thanks again for listening and downloading. We will be back next week for the Rise and Shout podcast, and we'll catch you then.
Go Cougars!